Meet Glenn Sandifer, a seasoned strategist and executive leader with over 20 years of experience in various business capacities. But he's not just about boosting organizational profitability. Glenn is on a mission to help you and others like you unlock the secrets to both professional and relationship success here on the All Things Black Podcast. Welcome again. This is another episode of the All Things Black Podcast. I'm your host, Daryl Barnes, and I have with me, like I stated earlier, Glenn Sandifer, author of the book, The Middle Ground. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Daryl. How are you? And thank you to your audience for your time today.
Absolutely. I am wonderful, and I'm blessed, and I thank you for making the time to be present on my show in this episode. As a live broadcast, I know we will benefit from your wealth of knowledge, especially in regards to your experience and tenure in many different capacities of business. But we would definitely want to talk about your book, The Middle Ground, and I think we should just get straight to it. But before we do that, I want to thank the listening audience for definitely, you know, subscribing to my podcast, listening to my different episodes and things like that. And for those that have not discovered my podcast yet, please, by all means, look out for Black podcasts or those podcasts that are really relevant to you and would, you know, give you a wealth of knowledge and things like that, and that you can consume just about on a daily basis. But make sure you like, share, subscribe, and definitely go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review on my particular podcast or what your favorite episode or things of that nature. So Glenn, you said you were good. You're doing fabulous. You got you're with your family and your little girl and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And she's out in the yard doing some fall.
And she done now. She's eating the nachos that just got.
Got you.
She's already switched on to the next thing.
Got you. She's on to the next boy. I got you. Definitely. All right. So Glenn, with your 20 plus years of experience, kind of tell us about your background and that journey in those different capacities and kind of what led up to the development of your book, The Middle Ground, if you would.
Yeah. So the first thing is I did not want to write a relationship book. That was the thing that I said I would not do. I would not be that guy coming out with another relationship book talking about how to do something. But over a 20-year period of leading successful sales and marketing teams, I realized that there were some correlations in business success and relationship success. And I also saw that as more people became successful professionally, their relationships suffered. So I wanted to know the why behind that. And as I did research and as I led organizations, I found that we weren't coaching or leading people, we were leading them to a production quotient, and we were missing the personality and the personal aspect of their lives. So I began coaching around what I then called like the total man or the total woman to learn more about them with the aim to become the best version of themselves, because the best version of yourself shows up professionally every day. And what I found is that it was a natural progression across different roles and different organizations. Everyone wanted to talk about the same thing. So as I began my speaking journey, attending conferences, everybody had a book. So I said, I need to write a book. So I started with the sales playbook. I started with the scaling organizations book, books you guys will never see. And someone brought up to me, can't remember the person, at a conference and said, you know what, you really should put a relationship book together around all this stuff we're talking about. It would be great. And so that all happened in the backdrop of relationship pain and relationship failure. So I went through a really hurtful and harmful divorce in the early 2010s. And in that process, what I did not do was blame others or blame the other person. I said, I need to take accountability onto what was my part in this and why did it fail? That's really different than what we hear in the space right now, because poor relationship outcomes is everyone else's fault. So I spent 2 years in therapy, along with trying to develop and grow in a career. And I found that there was that correlation. And I found that people can get the relationship outcome that they want. I can get the relationship outcome that I want. I have to be willing to do the work. And the work is knowing who who I am, know what I want, know what I qualify for, and by knowing what who I qualify for, what they want from me, that changes the dynamic in the way that you enter the marketplace for your dating in order to get the end outcome, which people say they want, which is marriage, one person, multiple kids, legacy as a long-term result.
That's actually a very powerful statement. I kind of want to ask you about the acknowledgement piece, because again, like you said, a lot of us do not want to do that. It's everybody else's fault except our own. What brought you to the realization that you had to take accountability on for yourself, number one, and how did that kind of make you feel in the moment, knowing that, okay, well, yes, I have to shoulder the burden for my responsibility on my part for the delusion of the marriage. And then what were the steps that kind of led you to go ahead and start taking up counseling?
Well, it was, you know, I'm a person of faith. So I profess a faith and belief in Jesus Christ. It's well documented. So I was far off the path as far as showing up and trying to be a Christian and looking Christian-y and saying all the right things and attending all the events, but I did not have my faith walk together. And part of that journey was reestablishing that faith walk and acknowledging that what was created by God, which what I believe is marriage, was established by him, ordained by him. And when you follow the process as outlined, you will get the result that you want. That's not what was happening. And so I had to go take a step back and acknowledge you failed here. You didn't do the work up front and you ignored some things that in reality, God tried to tell you. Tell me at that time, this is not, I don't need you to go in this direction. And once you come out of that process and go into therapy, that's why I always tell people, get a licensed clinical professional to help you overcome the traumas or overcome the pains, because it helps unlock the potential that you have and moving past that result. And so that acknowledgement was very simple. It was like, it was my fault. God said it was my fault. And if I'm going to get what God has for me, I have to be willing to do the work to understand why it failed so that I don't repeat the steps.
Gotcha. Do you find that it's somewhat difficult for people that are not of a specific faith to kind of somewhat shoulder responsibility? Because I understand where you're coming from. If you're a faith, you're in a place or in a spot where you say, you know what? Yes, I got to look at it through the lens of, you know, my faith, you know, right? But it does it become a little bit difficult when people not of a particular a specific faith for them to be able to take accountability?
I think accountability is hard for both people in the faith doctrine and outside of it. Accountability requires self-reflection and introspection. So I don't think it's easier or harder. I actually think, and let me pause there, I probably think it's harder for some people of faith to acknowledge a shortcoming. But I would say that what we find in the practice of therapy is that people who do not have a faith doctrine submit themselves to a belief system and a practice, whether it's the Imago communication technique, that is what they will subscribe to in order to get the outcome that they want. But I believe just from my experience, both people of faith and people who don't have a faith belief, accountability is hard. But I've also seen people be accountable outside of the faith doctrine to get the results that they're looking for.
Gotcha. I like that answer. So moving forward, I believe in your book, you emphasize challenges balancing professional success and relationship success. Can you kind of share some consistent themes you've observed in regards to your experiences and those of highly successful individuals?
Yeah. So highly successful individuals will say this: if they pick wrong, their success is unsustainable. So what we talk about, there are two books. There's part one and part two of The Middle Ground, How to Get Great Dating Outcomes in the Modern World. Part one opens up by talking about how we got here. And how we got here were decisions that were made specifically in the West in the late 50s, early 60s, that saw a breakdown of the family structure. And that breakdown of the family structure is documented. And since that breakdown of the family structure, there has been a fight to get that soul back in the country. That's just one. So what we find is that as people have more professional success, it is becoming harder to get the relationship success that they're seeking. Chapter two of part one of the book opens up by talking about the differences between men and women. There are six type of men, six type of women. And what we find as people are more successful, they are completely misaligned. What is the misalignment? All the ladies that are listening, who is your favorite guy out of the book? It is the city boy or the F boy, because he has the three C's, the charisma, he has the conversation, he has the chemistry, and you want that because it's exciting. But he has no interest in a long-term relationship. He's only interested in conquest. So you spend your 20s and 30s with the F boy, and then all men get painted with that brush. While you're a bit successful professionally, while you get your second and third degree, while you get your promotion, while you start your business, while your real estate empire is booming, you are still struggling in that relationship aspect. And it's because you have not identified the misalignment. So then when you come alongside what you really want as a modern man, you cannot paint him with the brush of a city boy. And by painting him with the brush of a city boy, you see failure after failure after failure of relationship because of the decision of the misalignment. We also see it with men. We see men who want to be traditional men, who traditional men are men, we say it from the 50s, they take care of the home financially, they take care of all the needs. The woman who is their wife, keywords, is the one who takes care of the children, takes care of the needs of the household, is responsible for the nurturing and the support of the man. We have traditional men who are out here with women who have no interest in tradition. They're interested in modern 50-50 partnerships, and they're finding themselves frustrated along the way of dating because they can't get her to, quote, submit. She's not going to. She wants partnership. And she's earned the right for partnership with her education, her background, and her success. And there are plenty of men in the marketplace who are looking for a modern relationship because they want to split the bills. They don't want to pay everything anymore. And they're willing to work with someone because that's what they have aspired for.
That's a good summation of what's actually going on in the world today. Do you think it's because the focus is so much centered on career now and the establishment of what some would call, you know, my kingdom or, you know, queendom or whatever the case may be. And I have to be so career driven and education driven that I'm completely missing everything else. And that misalignment actually comes into play because we're hyper focused on the things that really, that really don't amount to much. But what would you say in regards to that?
No, I would say that we saw a shift, as we talk about in chapter one of part one of the book. We saw a shift in the structure where now women have more access to money, education, opportunity than any time in history, all over the world. And so with that comes the illusion of choice. The same skills that it takes to be successful professionally are not the same skills it takes in a relationship. Completely different skill set. It's a more emotional and intuitive quotient than a physical and a rational quotient. So there's the first struggle. But when you spend 15 years from an education standpoint, working on a skill, developing relationships, developing a brand, and then it's time for a relationship, it's really hard to pivot because the things that you need to do in order to pivot will feel like to a person they're sacrificing everything that they've built up. And we hear that more so with women, specifically modern women that we talk about. They're not giving up the stuff that they work for from the age of 20 to 35 just for some guy. This is what we hear. If I'm going to be with him, he needs to be, and then we start the sentient list. And the sentient list is really a check against me losing everything that I've worked so hard to build and fight for.
So a lot of people's identity is wrapped up in their acclimation of different things, right? My degree, my house, my $500,000 home, my Mercedes Benz, all this other kind of stuff. And I just don't want to relinquish my identity. And if I, you know, because if I do that, I'm going to get rid of my identity. It's essentially, that's, you know, what you're kind of saying.
Yeah, the identity that we have is in our society is wrapped up in stuff, which is different than what people of any faith profess. But having the stuff is fine, but don't get wrapped up and caught up in the stuff. The stuff should be an addition instead of who you are. I think we've gotten to the point, and I talk about in the book how social media has lied to us for the last 15 years. And so we're now, all of us that's probably listening to this right now are old enough to remember when there was not a Facebook. And when you actually had to go to the bar or the lounge and meet someone and dress up and have conversation and have a discussion and get to know someone on a sidekick and try to text them or on a BlackBerry. We remember those days. We remember, especially the men, remember being rejected, and the rejection hardened you and made you come with a better approach the next week or the next weekend. And That's not society today. Social media tells me I can swipe left, swipe right. I can DM or I can move forward. And if this person's not going to work and meet me where I am and give me exactly what I want, there are 20 other people.
Right. I got options.
I got options. Yeah. So, and the reality is options, saying I have options is the lie that people have bought. And you only need one person. But saying you have options over 1,000 makes it hard to connect with one person.
That is correct. That's true. I 100% agree with that. You mentioned, I think you even said it earlier, about qualifying. So getting people to understand what they qualify for and whom they qualify for. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, because everybody believes they qualify for everything. I don't qualify to go play for the NBA. I'm too old. I have too many ailments and I'm not good enough. I couldn't even get a D1 scholarship back in the day. I could probably get one now if I was a guy, but I didn't qualify for that opportunity. And the reason was I didn't have the height. I didn't have the skill. I didn't have the drive. I didn't have the work ethic. Saying that out loud, it seems more like a taking an L or a loser mentality. But the reality is I just wasn't good enough. So if I wanted to be around the game of college ball and eventually around the pros, it was going to be around the business aspect of it. So making sure you know what you qualify for is key because it makes sure you don't waste time. Right now we have with hot girl summer, cold auntie winter, super spring selfies, whatever the TikTok trend is and what everyone is telling me, you're wasting time. It is a distraction. And it is, while it's quote entertaining, it's keeping you from the destiny that I believe God has for you, which is a holy, fulfilling relationship. And by spending time saying, I am a man, I live in my mama's basement, but my mama lived with me. And, you know, I'm making, you know, $53,000 a year. I got my degree. I don't have any debt. I need a woman who is, I need her to be 5'2". 115, 36, 24, 38. I need her to be fit, feminine, submissive. I need her to come alongside me and support me and do all this to me. Okay. What does that woman want? You don't qualify for her because you stay with your mama. So stop trying to say all the things that you want that you don't really qualify for. You are a guy. That's what I talk about in the book. You qualify for a gal or a chick who's going to be 53, same look, same build, same socioeconomic background, same interest, and you guys could have a 40-year marriage with multiple children. But instead of doing that because that sounds like settling, you try to go shoot your shot on DMs and on dating apps, and you keep leaving yourself heartbroken. That's why we see a trend in the space right now of relationships where men are saying they're opting out. They're opting out because they're tired of the rejection, because they're average at best. And they can't seem to get above average results. So they're just opting out. Then we have the next group of men who we like to talk about, ladies. Your second favorite guy is the male. The male is looks like a man, talks like a man, sounds like a man, feels like a man, acts like a man, but is not a man. Men know how to positively assert themselves in the world, evaluate a market, extract value through relationships, and they do it respectfully. Males can't. Males don't have the ability to go out and build relationships, build rapport, build value in the market. They're always looking for someone to help them up, help them out. That's why when you move the male in, sisters, y'all are frustrated after 2 years because he's still on your couch and he still hasn't proposed to you. He can't do that. Only men can be husbands, not males. So when you spend time with the city boy, when you spend time with the male, and that's your experience for a 10 to 15 year period, you never get to men that are traditional, high value, or modern because you have been stuck in that trauma and in that cycle with those type of men. And those type of men are the ones, unfortunately, that you are qualifying for because you keep repeating the cycle. Modern men, traditional men, and high value men are not going to settle. They're not going to take less than what they expect out of their relationship outcome with their woman who's going to be their wife. So you have to elevate. So you have to know who you are. So I need to know what type of woman I am or man I am. I have to know what I want. I know that I'm a gal and I would really like to be with a traditional man. What does a traditional man want from me? And what do I need to do to get that, to give it to him?
that seems to be so difficult for a lot of people to do. And this next question might seem, how do I put it? It might seem kind of silly, and you may have already answered it. And again, it might be a repetitive question, but how much do you think, well, what are the dangers of the aesthetics of a thing? Because again, I hear a lot of people talking about the, you know, a lot of the tangibles or what somebody looks like or something like that. And they think that that will provide them something of substance in a relationship. But what are I mean, if you understand what I'm saying, what are the dangers of just living strictly from just the aesthetic point of it in trying to build a relationship?
I think from the aesthetic standpoint, and let's take it, let's flip it on its head, because now I believe we're hearing women say this more than men. So women are actually saying, if he ain't a 6 or above, 6 foot, 6 pack, 6 figures, let's say that that's their aesthetic. And then let's say the men's aesthetic is all physical and their femininity and their, you know, just their beauty, their cooperation. I don't think that that is the problem as long as you qualify for that. I think the problem is the delusion around that I qualify for everything I say that I want on this list. And I think what we're seeing is for a sustained period in history over the last 15 years, which correlates with social media and tech boom, we're seeing the aesthetic be the primary driver in everything. Whether it's a man choosing a woman choosing to deal with a man, at a minimum, it's got to be, if my number is 6, he's got to be a 6 or above. If my number is 8, he got to be an 8 or above. If we hear terms like this, and everybody who's listening knows it, adjustable 6, adjustable 8, universal 10s, those terms have been around for a decade. Where in the past, we would literally say, all right, let's figure it out. I'm a 5, you're a 6. And that's typically how it used to be. A man would be a 5 and a woman would be a 6 or a 7. Let's just say that. And that was normal and accepted in society. Then it switched as we had more access to cable TV, larger network TV. I still remember a time, and I talk about in the book, how we've gone from local relationships where my grandparents, both sets of my grandparents came from the same county in Mississippi. Both of my grandfathers went to World War II. And if you know your history of World War II, the fact that the men that came back and were able to establish family is a miracle. Went back, got their woman, took her to the North, had 7 kids, lived on the same street in the same city, and that's how my mom and dad met. We went away from a localized view to a neighborhood view, to a city view, to a regional state view, to a national and international view. That's why we're having the aesthetic conversation, because people are interested in being flued out. They're interested in flying out. Flying in, import, export is what someone I talked to as I was writing the book, that said that that was his focus. I'm just going to import, export, because I can't deal with it on a daily basis. And that ends up leading to the overvaluation and the delusion of self, which leads to poor relationship outcomes. People are more depressed than ever before. People are having poor relationship outcomes. We have a higher divorce rate and a higher breakup rate, and children born out of wedlock at a much higher rate across all sectors and all demographics. And I believe it's because we've seen this push of the aesthetic only, pushing the aesthetic, whether it's man or woman, and not looking internally for self and looking at internal for the person you choose.
So how does that work for people that say that they've done the internal work? However, when you have conversations with people who say that they've done the eternal work, it doesn't seem like the work was actually done. You kind of follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are, a lot of people now, especially on social media, you know, saying I've done the work, and they're telling everybody else to do the work. But when you listen to the conversation, it doesn't seem like there's work that's been done at all.
Yeah. So, and I think we have that. And I think that's just a result of the availability. I mean, we live in an attention and influence economy now. So more attention, more influence is monetized now than ever before. But I think that's where the work comes in as a man and as a woman, as you're vetting. So I'll talk to the men right now, and I'll talk to the women, because this is important on how you choose the man that you're going to be with, make a deal with, is what I say. If I'm a guy and I'm 33 years old, and I went to college, I got my 4-year degree, spent 3 years working, went back and got a graduate degree, got my second promotion, third promotion, fourth promotion. I'm now at homecoming. It's homecoming season as of this recording at PWIs and HBCUs. I'm 33. I've been spending the last 15 years working my tail off to make myself the best version of myself professionally. I'm at the peak of my earnings and things are, I'm about to go into the high earning wealth building years. Ladies, that's just the reality. So when he comes to homecoming, if he stayed, kept his head down, worked on himself, has his spiritual life together, friend life, family life together, he can just look at the market and then he can just have regular conversations with no pressure. Hey, so good to see you, Stephanie. Hey, it's so good to see you. This, been following you on social media. Yeah, we should get together when I get to Charlotte or when I get to Atlanta. Yeah. It's going to be completely different because the way he approaches has no desperation in it, and the women will adjust because now she's going to be like, oh, he wasn't thirsty in my DMs. I saw him. I've been seeing him. Okay, hold on. Let me see. When he goes out and he has a drink or has appetizers or goes to the lounge, he's going to be like, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? How many children do you want? How do you want your children to be raised? Do you want to take care of them? Do you want to send them to daycare? Do you want them to be at home? How long do you plan on working outside of the home? Do you want to plan on working outside of the home while the kids are young? So about how old are they? Oh, okay, that's cool. Oh, what do I know? Yeah, so, you know, I got my business. I got a real estate portfolio, all of that. Yeah, money's no problem. She can't do what she's doing with the city boy and the male that she's been dealing with for the last couple of years. She's going to have to adjust, and she's going to have to recognize, all right, do I qualify for this? This is what I want. I've been dealing with this other stuff. He's actually available. He's communicating. He's giving me good eye contact. I need to make some adjustments. So now you can look at the market and make a buying decision, is what I call it, just like in business, on that specific person without the pressure of desperation. Too many men are making desperate decisions in their 20s and upset that women have better options in their 20s than they do. And then we have women who are upset men have more options once they get past 35. The sweet spot is around 31, 33, making a deal and sticking it out with that person. And when you make that deal with the person, as you start going down the road of life together and you start having those milestones of, you know, engagement, wedding, first kid, second kid, third kid, first house, second house, fifth house, promotion, 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 it starts to build the long-term value proposition that we're missing. If you're just focusing on yourself and you got your career and you got your aesthetic and you got your house and you got your condo and you got your 401k and you got your eyelash company, you got all of that stuff, it's really hard to connect with the person because you don't see the value in the long-term connection because you've been able to do it on your own. And what ends up happening inevitably is what we're seeing, especially with our modern women, exhausted. Exhausted by 35, 36, 40, just ready to throw their hands up. And if you would have made the deal at 31, by the time you're 40 with the two kids, you might be like, yeah, you know what? We'll trade my car in. I'll go down to a regular car. You and the kids got the car. You ain't got to work no more. And then watch what happens from a societal standpoint when that switch happens and things start moving in the right direction. You start to have families return, the soul and the culture of the communities return, and then children are having better outcomes than the generation before.
But how do we get to a place where people buy in? That's the one thing. That's the thing that comes to my mind, like the buy-in, right? Because anywhere you go, there has to be somewhat of a buy-in. So how do we get people back to
that? I think the buy-in comes through pain, unfortunately. I mean, my buy-in came through pain. So I had to make a deal and I had to buy into the mentality and buy into the process that I subscribe to today for the middle ground in our book series through my pain. I was trying to do it a different way and do it on my own way, and it wasn't working. So unfortunately, I don't want people having 2 and 3 painful experiences until they learn the lesson. Have the one or listen to someone who's been through it, learn, and then start to get down the road of life together. But I think unfortunately, it's going to take some more pain. And I think we're starting to get there, especially in the relationship space, where when you look at, quote, two sides of it, the middle ground is starting to be discussed a little bit more, which is why the book is out now versus 2019 or 2020.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So yes, the middle ground. We definitely want to talk about the book. The listeners can definitely go to themiddlegroundbook.com. Glenn Sandifer is the author. Said a lot of incredible things here, a lot of good stuff. They can also find you at themiddleground book.com, or is there any other social media handles or anything like that where people can contact
you? Yeah, so the Middle Ground book is TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and then Middle Ground book is on Instagram. But our website is the place where we house everything. That's where you can purchase both books. We have it available on Google and on Apple Books as well, Audible and Kindle. And then you can get your paperback version within 2 days, 2 day shipping. So we have that. And then on our website is where we post all of the podcasts such as this that I've had the privilege of joining over the last year and a half as we've been on this amazing journey.
Absolutely. Any hosting seminars or anything like that that you go to and would invite people to come to actually have a discussion or just listen to you talk about your book?
Yeah. So what we do is I'm now booking for Q1 of 2024. So all the speaking engagements are listed online. I don't have anything for the rest of the year because it's Q4 and I'm out of it. But I'll definitely make sure that we link that out so we can get that to your audience.
Absolutely. One of the things I definitely want to do is invite you back because I really wanted to get, I want to get some data from you in terms of what the response is, you know, from both sides, from both genders, you know, from male and female, about your findings in your book and in your incredible journey that a lot of us are discovering now. And, you know, for you to be able to, you know, make that book or create the book that you did. But I definitely want to invite you back so we can talk about that information. And see, you know, what the transformations have been like in certain, you know, in people's lives as they come and witness your own transformation and your own story and things like that. So I definitely want to invite you back. I do have a lot more questions for you, but for the sake of time, I'm going to give you the floor. If there's any parting words, anything that I may have missed or anything like that. So you can go and you can take that time right now.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, dating is not dead. There is hope. On the other side of it, we live in a modern world, but we can still get the traditional outcome you're looking for. I like to tell everyone, if you want a great dating outcome in a modern world, you have to be willing to do the work. The work is knowing who you are, know what you want, know what you qualify for, and know what who you qualify for wants from you. That is how we reach the middle ground, and that is how you get long-term, sustained relationship success.
Perfect, perfect. This has been incredible. It's been very informative to me. I'm definitely going to go ahead and purchase your book. I'm always about learning, growth, things like that. I too had to go through a bit of a pain, you know, to acknowledge that, yes, I was at fault for certain portions of the demise of a relationship. And again, that does take a lot of maturity, takes a lot of growth to be able to even acknowledge something like that, which in turn, a lot of us don't do that. Like you say, we shift blame, you know, we put blame on somebody else and that way. When we do that, we never fully grow beyond that point. But man, it's been incredible to have you here, and I thank you once again for showing up and having this dialogue and this conversation. So again, for the listeners, the where you can find the book is themiddlegroundbook.com. The author is Glenn Sandifer, and if you do want to get in contact with him, he's given his social media handles, which is also going to be in the show notes, posted later while this is posted. This is also going to be video and audio, so make sure that you go to Apple Podcasts or maybe Spotify or whatever your favorite streaming platform is to listen to this particular episode. And I want to thank you guys again for being my listeners and subscribers. Subscribe. Let other people know about this particular podcast, because we're going to continue to have these type of discussions and dialogues. Thank you guys once again for sitting with me. And Gary, thank you so much. I'm definitely going to be in contact with you. We're going to do this once again.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you, everyone.
Yes, sir. Thank you.